Nicole, did you ever notice how the sign by Ace of Base has really strange key changes?
I did not, Mark. I'm a real person.
Well, let me tell you about it. I'll let you talk about neuroscience gobbledygook.
Yes, I thought you'd never ask.
This is the Nevermind the Music podcast,
where one psychologist
and one musician
deep dive into the songs you love.
So you don't have to.
And there's plenty of time to get off topic.
From Semi-Charmed Life to The Way You Move.
And who could forget The Crossroads?
Is it The Crossroads or The Crossroads?
Save it for the episode, Mark.
Listen to Never Mind the Music
wherever you get your podcasts.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMEB on Twitter. Today we are talking with singer-songwriter Bishop Briggs. You may know Bishop from her songs River and White Flag, as well as my personal favorite, her cover of the classic 80s INXS hit, Never Tear Us Apart. Bishop just recently released a deluxe version of her album, Tell My Therapist I'm Fine, including the song Woman is King. The album has been described as having raw honesty and fearless vulnerability, making the album truly a compelling listen. So check out Bishop's music, future tour info, and merch at bishopbriggs.com. Now on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one issue that comes up for many of us on our mental health journey is how we cope with the loss of a loved one. And in our conversation, Bishop talked about the loss of her older sister, Kate, who died in 2021 of ovarian cancer. Now, under any circumstances, the loss of a loved one can be an incredibly painful and life-changing experience. Many of us experience intense feelings of anger, sadness, and anxiety related to a loss, especially the loss of someone very close to us. And coping with that loss can often be a difficult and lifelong journey. One of the particular challenges that Bishop discussed is that when we suffer the loss of a loved one, there is often a mindset that people have around us, and that we often have for ourselves, that we will grieve for a period of time, and then everything will go back to being quote-unquote normal. We will feel the same as we did before our loss about our home, our neighborhood, our work, our interests, our living family and friends. But unfortunately, oftentimes when we experience a loss, it doesn't just change us for a time, but rather we feel that we've changed permanently. We feel differently about ourselves, our lives, the world around us. And we can't just go back to normal life as it was before our loss. And we may feel a sense of isolation, not sure how to connect to others, not even really sure how to connect to ourselves. Who are we after such a loss? Now, in an ideal world, we are given the freedom and grace to grieve and cope as we need throughout our lifetime. We are able to grapple with loss and what this means for us throughout our lives. But at some point, if we expect ourselves, or the people around us expect us, to go back to whatever normal was, it may create difficulties in coping with our loss. And that pressure to return to normal may do more harm than good as we struggle with our loss. It may cause us to suppress, avoid, or criticize our thoughts and feelings as we deal with our grief. And Bishop described how she coped and continues to cope with her loss and how it has impacted her mental health journey, including at times feeling numb and disconnected from herself. Now, a trigger warning. In our conversation, Bishop discusses the concept of suicide as part of her struggle with loss and her mental health journey. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Bishop has to say. Hey, Bishop, welcome to Going There.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, thank you. This is the coolest thing ever. And what you do is just the most inspiring. So to be here is a very big honor.
Oh, thank you so much. So let's start with something you and I talked about right before the episode, which is that when people go through a difficult event or a series of difficult events, whether it's an ongoing mental health issue, a loss, even a physical health issue, all range of different things, there is an assumption that people start out one way, they deal with their issues, and then they come back, quote unquote, back to normal. They come back as their old selves, and they're going to relate to themselves, the world, the people around them in the same way. But oftentimes, when people have gone through a difficult event, it changes them fundamentally. And I think you've talked about this before in terms of your own experience. And if we could start there and just talk about how that process has built for you, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think I have seen such extreme versions of what loss is, you know, through media. And there is this very definitive, there's this person that, is working a high profile job, not prioritizing their family. They have this major loss. They prioritize their family. And it's very black and white. And I think in my own experience, it was really freeing to live, survive, experience the gray and understand that nuance is actually what makes it so isolating. I think that the fact that everyone has a different relationship with whoever they have lost, everyone has a different relation to grief. There's no textbook describing what to do. We're all experiencing loss in different ways, depending on the circumstance. And so essentially, we're all going to end up in this melting pot of mess at the end of it. I think the isolation is the biggest point that I definitely noticed. You have this feeling of no one else has experienced this. And in some ways it's true, you know, no one else had your exact relationship. No one else was raised the way you were. No one else, but it doesn't mean that we don't have connective tissue that can help us.
One of the things that I find very fascinating is that despite how different people's relationships are or experiences with themselves are different, and yet when we lose something, there's an expectation that we should all grieve the same way. And I'm not really sure why we decided to get together and say that there is a good way or a bad way to grieve, because I don't think it works for anybody to have this uniform sense of grief.
Yes, there's definitely safer ways to grieve. It feels there might be some safer in learning about other people's substance things. I think that was a big amount of feedback that I got, was that a lot of people that I knew that had experienced loss, when I did go to turn to them, they were just honest. And they said, honestly, you know, I was like living in a bar at that time. You know, I didn't leave the bar, but I was just completely numb. And I had decided really early on, out of respect for my sister, who happened to be sober, I just decided I'm not going to do any of that. It's a depressant, first of all, but also there, for some reason, and I'm really glad, but for some reason, I just was like, this is the way that I can honor her and respect her is by not going down that route. But what I came to learn is that there are other ways you can numb yourself. I'm like smiling as I say that. No, but just because on paper, it isn't called the same thing. So it's like, well, I didn't drink or do drugs, you know, like the other people, you know, I grieved the right way. It's like, well, you also did. And I don't want to say it because, you know, I don't want to give examples of things people can do, but there are a lot of ways that you can malnourish yourself and do things that won't contribute to your longevity and your well-being, of course. I mean, all that to say, there are different, even if things on paper look differently, there is no good or bad way, to grieve.
Yeah. And so one of the things we might want to think about, again, thinking about how the process of grief changes us, the need to be numb at that point, you know, and maybe we can talk about that. Like you said, that alcohol, drugs is definitely one way that some people feel numb. Some people feel like it brings them alive in some ways.
Totally. But yes.
Oftentimes it people feel numb. And so what is the need in the face of grief to feel numb, and how did you deal with that, if that was kind of an impulse you were feeling?
So when all this stuff was happening with my sister, very briefly, before everything got crazy, but there had been a diagnosis, my mom came out to visit, and she all of a sudden was like, I don't know how to drive. We were like, what? You've been driving your whole life? She's like, yeah, I don't feel comfortable with it anymore. I don't even know how to do it. And then me, on the other hand, you know, it was during COVID. So like, you know, it was very short staffed. So I learned everything I could. Learned everything I could about medicine, learned everything about what she was going through, learned how to apply things, you know, obviously like with doctors and nurses explaining to me how to do things to supply the medicine. I, what is it called? Over, da, 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 and then under, blah, blah, blah. Like your brain, it basically either goes on overdrive or it's reacting to the trauma in a different way where it reverts. So it then goes back where it's,
yeah, I think that a lot of times our bodies and our minds are kind of like, all right, in the face of any given situation, it's like, okay, so what are we doing here?
Yes.
If we're, you know, it's kind of like a fight or flight thing. It's like if we're, or a you know, kind of like freeze sort of thing. It's like, look, we'll do whatever, but it almost feels like there's this instantaneous decision and then your whole body and mind just goes towards it. Like there was a big meeting and everybody voted and agreed and it's just like whoa, and you just feel like you're kind of taken away with it. It's like, okay, I guess we're doing the over, or I guess we're doing the under.
Yes. Yeah, like it was like there was no choice. Like for, you know, my mom was briefly visiting in a thing that was completely, you know, just me doing. And I think in terms of what you're discussing with this numb, because I was my sister's advocate. And I think a lot of people experience this. There were so many tasks after she passed away. And it was like, again, with this like honoring her, or like, this is the least I could do, because she would normally be the one to organize everything. She was the logistics person. And I remember after my sister passed away, I, you know, was taken into a room to fill out forms, you know, and it's just, and it's like, what am I going to do? I mean, I have to like almost pretend that didn't just happen, you know, about a few minutes prior, and I have to fill out these forms correctly. You know, I have to do this correctly. And so I think with the numbing can mean all sorts of things, you know, exactly what you were saying with the numbness. I felt like I had to complete all these tasks. I remember going into, you know, an AT&T store, you know, and they were just sort of like, you know, we don't believe you. I don't really want to out AT&T, you know, they don't make this process easy, like as in phone companies don't make the process easy. And I remember, you know, I had been, you know, these are the facts, these are the documents, you know, I'm waiting on this document because all sorts of things were delayed because of COVID, whatever. And then it just reached a point where, you know, shout out to this AT&T store, but I just, you know, I just showed her ID, you know, and you could tell we were sisters from the photo, you know, and they just like, they all just kind of started crying, you know, like, I'm not here trying to get, you know, trying to get out of an AT&T deal. But my point is, like, you can imagine there's so many steps that you don't even think about, depending on your position in the family or in relation to the person, that you kind of have to put on a different hat.
Yeah. And I think that one of the reasons why I think musicians have such a unique perspective on mental health is that, unfortunately, a lot of the things that musicians have to do, especially to become successful musicians, that are similar in some ways to what people have to deal with mental health. And this thing that you're talking about right now feels very much one of those things. It's like you are presenting to these people and you're doing your thing without there really being with them any acknowledgement of all that has gone on to get there.
Yes.
Like they don't know anything about it. Like they don't know. Yes. What you've been, and not, it's an actual ignorance, right?
Yes.
It's not a forced ignorance. Like, I don't want to hear it or whatever. They literally don't know. And so then there's this thing. And like, and if they happen, not unlike a musician with an audience, it's like, we don't really see all the things that go into being a musician, all the time, the effort, the practice, whatever. And then there's this moment. It's like, well, are the fans going to clap? Are they going to feel the emotional reaction or not? And I feel like there's something very similar about this, unfortunately, where it's like totally putting yourself out there and you have to kind of try to act, quote, it's almost like you had to perform just to get them to pay attention. And it's just sort of like, I don't know, that does something to a person over time to have to keep doing that.
Yeah, I also think, you know, in the process of talking to the nurses and doctors and, you know, every single day, and I had to retain the information to understand what was happening with my sister whilst obviously being completely traumatized and confused at what's happening. And the only similarity that I can think of, and again, this would be, it would be a reach, but it's this idea of no matter what day you've had, you put on the same show. It's your job to bring the release for the people in front of you, you know? And by the way, everyone has a different show, a different relation to the show. For me, I like to lean into my most empowered self, you know, and that can like have vulnerability and that can have all the things, but it, you know, you take whatever day you had and you go up. And I think that's why I have noticed I've noticed some amazing musicians that have done really well. You know, they'll act in one thing. You're like, wow, they're a really good actor. And it's like, well, you know, I think there is some line there where, you know, no matter what day they've had, they, you know, they show up consistently in the interview, you know, they whatever. And I think there has been a movement with mental health, especially since I started. So I started, you know, I was singing for a long time, but I will say, like, once I was in the public eye or like, you know, getting different interviews was like 2017, 2018. And I remember at that time, it really was, you know, there was a consistency with, especially being a woman was, a very cookie cutter example of how you should behave and how you should act. And I think it's been really exciting that in the conversations, there has been this openness to talking about it because we've seen how helpful it is for, you know, people to talk about it and for other people to hear someone that they potentially see as a very glittery person, to have them speak on something that they completely relate to and to know that they're not alone. So there has been a lot of progress made.
Yeah, because it's one of these things where it's sort of like if somebody falls, which obviously in and of itself is horrible, but like and they fall and they've clearly broken their leg, right? Like no one's going to just say to them like, well, you know, could you please sign this? Like there's a whole process of like acknowledging, oh, my God, you fell. Are you OK? Can we help you up? Can we get you
yes.
anything? There's a sense of it. And I think that when people have been through a loss, obviously, as what happened in your situation, once people sort of orient to it, usually, hopefully people are like, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? But it's difficult for someone. I mean, what do? Do you just walk around and like before you have an interaction with someone say, hey, I just want you to know I'm going through grief right now, but could you pass the salt?
Yeah, I think exactly. I think, you know, when you were describing, you know, like the person falling and I think part of what messes with the brain of anyone, and, you know, part of this conversation is talking about musicians and people in the public eye or whatever, is that I think part of what messes up people's brains is that, like, what messes up the musician, like, let's say, like, the Justin Bieber in this scenario, if it's Justin Bieber falling, they are going to want to take a picture. They are not necessarily going to ask. And I think that is a turn. You have to have such a solid separation from that to know that these people, you know, they might love you in a parasocial way and all this stuff, but they would prefer to get a photo with you and show it to their friends, then check on you to see if you're okay. And that's okay, because that doesn't have to be your person. I remember leaving a funeral and I was sobbing and someone came up to me. It was so bad. But I guess my point of this is I'm not Justin Bieber, and I had an interaction where I'm outside, you know, a funeral sobbing. Thankfully, it wasn't my sister's. I don't even know what I would have done if it was my sister's funeral, you know, and they asked me for a photo and to sign something. And, you know, and I just said, I think it's a tough time right now. And by the way, there doesn't even have to be something where, like, you're in the public eye or anything like that. I think, you know, not everyone, even if you're not in the public eye, not everyone is going to pick up on these subtleties of what we're describing, which is what I think makes it difficult, because there are still these social norms that we feel the need to upkeep because of, you know, years past.
But there is a parallel, and I think one of the things that's tough, this is my personal opinion, but I think we've talked about this on this show before. Like, I do think that we have a somewhat abusive relationship with our rock stars. Like, if you just think about the premise that, like, you're going to go and you're going to cheer for someone, and if they have a problem, you're going to be like, you're going to immediately, like, turn on them, or you're going to pass it to all your friends or whatever. It's like, just that alone, I mean, that's one piece of it. Or if they perform well, you like them, and they perform well, or they do a kind of music all of a sudden that you don't like. And it's sort of, and, you know, now, you know, like, when I was growing up, it was kind of known, but it wasn't as obvious. Now it's documented, yes, you know, in terms of articles and social media and stuff like that. And there is something I think that people feel as though, if I were to say it this way, okay, that's what really happens in relationships. Like, what, and I think that that's, a lot of people see that as, okay, these are people's true feelings about people. It's like, we love them when things are going well. We hate them when they're not, cast them out. And I think that a lot of times when people then have something like grief, I think that there is a moment where people start to kind of wonder and maybe even see, oh, like, we were good when I was performing, whatever that is, when I'm happy, when I'm, yes, in a good mood, when I want to talk about you. And it's like, and that, you know, people are entitled to that, but it's like, oh man, that sucks.
You know, the most eye-opening thing that I realized in that experience was asking anyone I was close to. I think the biggest misconception about suicide is that it's selfish. There's this very big commentary out there. I don't know if you can tell, I grew up Catholic. There's something in there. But anyways, but in being there, in being in the visualization of it, and being, the biggest thing that I felt was, oh my gosh, this is going to make everyone around me so much happier, because because I've been the biggest burden to them. And that's what you feel like, you know, you, no matter what, you know, even if you're just a few shades darker than you normally are, you're like, that's enough to be, you know, to be making an effect on their life. And I remember, in thinking about that, I decided to ask those around me, you know, if I came to you with something that was really heavy on my heart and something I was going through, like, how would that make you feel? And every person said, oh, it would be the biggest honor. Oh my gosh, that you would trust me. You know, and it's like, yeah, that's how I feel. You know, if someone said to me, hey, you know, like, if I came to you and I was saying, I'm really in the depths and this is what I've been going through and this is what I've been thinking about, how would you respond? It would mean so much to me that they chose me to confide in, that they, it would be a testament to our years of friendship, our years of love, whatever it is. But there is this very trapped feeling. And then I think, you know, the industry surrounding, you know, talking with a therapist, now all of a sudden they're going to, you know, you're going to be reported, and then you will be taken away from, you know, your family, your comforts. And so it really was, it's very disorienting to experience that.
I think this is a good example of what we were talking about at the beginning, because I think that it starts with a basic misconception, right? Because one of the things that unfortunately happens, I think, when people are in intense grief or depressed or whatever they're going through, is that they no longer feel the connections that they once did. They no longer see the world in the same way. And so when someone looks in on someone who's feeling suicidal and says, well, you're being selfish, it's based on the premise that they fully connect with and understand everything in their life. And that's why, you know, the idea of someone saying, like, I don't understand why you're so depressed. You have such a wonderful life. It's like, I don't understand why you have diabetes. You have such a wonderful life. Like, these are just different things. And so that, to me, is unfortunately a real good example of where I think people then become more disconnected, because it's like, wait, I'm not selfish. I don't feel anything. There's like, I am under all this rubble. It's like, the idea that I would matter enough to be selfish is not even in my purview. So I don't even really know what we're talking about here. And it's hard for people who haven't been in that space to understand like how desperate the thought of suicide can be.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lowe Tullhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes.
Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.